Hi, everyone. My name is Wendy, and I am a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater, and I'm honored to be here. I think it's so funny that I have never been to an online meeting before, so this is kind of wild. I also think this is in divine order because I'm in the car on the way to someplace, and we've been driving the whole time, and now as I'm about to speak, we are pulling up, and so hopefully you'll be able to hear me even better once we park the car. So thanks. Bear with me. If you can't hear right now, you will be able to very, very, very shortly. Okay. So I'm going to dive into my story. In my life, in my professional life outside of these rooms, I work with writers and I work with them. And I always tell them that a great way to tell a story is to take the tradition that they use in the 12-step program and say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And it really is a divine way to kind of encapsulate my story. So I'm just going to dive in. I don't know if I've been a compulsive overeater my whole life. I'm not sure that that is true. I do have a very specific memory of the day that, as I like to think of it, the shame button was turned on. And for me, shame around my body and food came before the weight, which sounds sort of crazy, but I grew up in a family with a compulsive overeater, obese father, and a food police controlling food mother. And I was caught in the crosshairs of that. I was, you know, having to watch my food and monitor it and not eat fun food because my father was obese. And so all the quote unquote fun food in our house was hidden from him. And so I was sneaking food and having shameful behavior around food long before I was ever overweight. And I just think that that's really interesting. I think I had a fat head and then my body caught up later. But essentially, from the time I was a little girl till the time I was about 14 or 15 years old, I was the shortest one in the class. I was flat-chested. I didn't have any boobs. They used to call me Skeeters. That was what the boys called me because my boobs were like mosquito bites because I had no boobs. And I got my period when I was 17 years old. I was underdeveloped. And but when I got to, I guess it was high school, freshman year in high school. So I actually, not 17 is wrong. I was more about 14 or 15. I wanted to join the gymnastics team. And my gymnastics coach said, you need to lose weight to try out. And the second I heard that, I'm going to cry just thinking about this. My body, all of a sudden, which I always thought was just fine, suddenly was not okay. Somebody told me my body, something that I should have agency over because it's my body, nobody else's, right? It wasn't okay to be in the body that I was in. I got that message. And so I immediately started sneaking food. We used to practice for gymnastics in the cafeteria. And right next to the balance beam where I was were all the vending machines. And I would sneak food from there. I just started sneaking food. All of a sudden, the thing that was joyful and that was natural to eat suddenly was a terrible thing. And I started punishing myself. And then when I got to college, I ballooned up and gained weight. And I remember one time being at my parents' house over the holidays and being upstairs and standing in the top of the stairwell and overhearing my parents whispering loudly. I think that's something sometimes parents do when they want you to hear stuff, but they don't want you to, they act like they don't want you to hear it. So my parents were saying, what should we do with her? She's totally out of control. Maybe we should pull her out of college. She can't handle it. She can't take care of herself. She's so big. And so again, I just really had a lot of shame and a lot of feeling like I wasn't right. That I had to be different than who I was to feel worthy of love and of fitting in. When I graduated from college, I'm sort of giving you like the highlights here of the things that in my mind are turning points where each one of these things that happened, I got more and more disconnected to the idea that I had a body that God had given me and it was my birthright to be happy, joyous, and free. I did not feel that. I felt it was not my birthright. It was my responsibility to control my body and my weight so that I was worthy of love. And when I was 20 years old, I graduated college early and I was 20 and I went to visit my aunt and uncle in Northern California and I was molested by my uncle, by my mother's brother. And so once again, I thought, my body is just a source of trouble. Why am I causing this person to want me this way? I know what I will do. I had this thought. It was a conscious thought. I will make my body undesirable. I will put as much weight on my body as I can so that I won't force anyone to want me in that way, which of course is all backwards. I didn't know that at the time. I should say that, you know, all of these things I'm sharing are many, many decades ago. And even though I have perspective and I've done fourth steps and 10th steps, and I've done a lot of prayer and meditation and work and therapy and healing, I can still feel the pain of how I felt like I didn't belong all these years later. I'll be 66 in a couple months, and I'm still remembering that pain of that little Wendy like it was recently. I can really feel it. Oh, thank you. Pam is giving me little hearts. Back at you, sister. So let's talk about, at age 21, I came into program in New York City in the 80s, and I started program, and it was really great to know that there was a little slice of the world where people thought the way that I felt and felt the way that I felt. Just like I kind of was marveling at the fact that, you know, I can be on a phone sitting in California and people all over the country are here with me, and we all don't know each other, but we do know each other. And how amazing is that, right? So then I, you know, I did all this. I went to the program, and I worked on myself, and I got a sponsor, and I ended up sponsoring, and I started doing food plans that were helpful and did all the things. But ultimately, I've always felt like there are 12 steps, and the 12th step is to carry the message. And I always felt a big part of the message was that there was life beyond these rooms. And I didn't want to have a fear-based recovery, because I don't believe that food is the problem or the enemy. I don't believe that my body is the problem or the enemy. I believe my mindset and my beliefs around these things are what's dangerous. Just like I don't, you know, stinking thinking, I don't have red and yellow and green light foods. I know a lot of people have them, and I respect that. For me, it's really more red light behaviors. Like if I'm, you know, in, you know, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, too hungry, too angry, too lonely, too tired. That's the times that I don't make good choices around food, because what I really want and what my recovery is based on is having integrity with food. I don't want to have shame around food. So much of my food and my challenges with food and my body have been around that there's something wrong with me that needs to be fixed. And if I'm thin enough, that will fix it. Then I will deserve to be loved. Then I will deserve to have the career that I want. The sun will shine all the time. It'll never rain. There'll be, you know, unicorns and hearts and flowers everywhere. This is what I would tell myself. I will also say that the dieting mentality, which I have lived basically my entire life until recently, was for me a setup for binging. As soon as I told myself, you can't have this, the teenage rebel in me wanted three of them. And so in my recovery and my abstinence now, it is not so much about, I can't have this and I can't have that, but really, what am I really hungry about? What do I really need? And a lot of times I just need to be still, or I need to connect with somebody, or I need to feel feelings that are not comfortable. I need to grieve all of the years I spent of my life focusing on this beautiful body of mine, this body that has carried me, danced me, brought me to this, through this amazing life. I've traveled the world. I've had a career that I'm proud of. I gave birth to a beautiful son who's going to be 30 this year. I had beautiful relationships, some not so beautiful relationships, but I had some really good relationships, and I have a beautiful partner now, a husband that I love very dearly. I'm a pancreatic cancer survivor of 10 and a half years, and my body didn't quit on me. Like, I got cancer, but the cancer didn't get me. And so, thank you. Every time you put those hearts up, you make me want to cry. It's so cute. Anyhow, so all of these things to say that my abstinence is I'm abstaining from being unkind to myself. That's the biggest thing I could say about it. And I, you know, I think we spend a lot of time in these rooms and in our culture thinking about what you can't eat and what is somebody telling you, this is what you need for your body to work. And I really think it's really great to come to the place, as they say in the promises, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I believe that if I am working my program and if I am aligned with God's purpose for me, then I do make good choices around food and I do know what I need. And so I really invite all of you to think about what would be a loving way to be in relationship with food. And I think it's also, again, part of life is to have pleasure, right? If it says in the big book, it's our birthright to be happy, joyous, and free, right? That's what God wants for us. Part of that is pleasure. You know, there's a philosophy in the Japanese tradition, in the Japanese culture, that a big part of what makes one happy is pleasure. And pleasure abused is not good, right? In excess is not good. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't have pleasure. It doesn't mean that when we are present for food, it should be a good thing. And I would say to think about my eating, I try to say a prayer before I eat. Don't always do it, but I work on that. And just, you know, to be thankful for the people that made the food, the farmers that made it, the trucks that brought it to me, all of that. And then to really savor and enjoy what I'm eating, because it gives me sustenance and life. And for today, I'm grateful that I have a life. And so it's a celebration. So I'm going to take the next few minutes to talk about some things that I do in real time that are practical as part of my recovery. One thing is this thing called the pause. A lot of times my eating was compulsive, and so too was my behaviors in every other area of my life. There's an expression, I don't know who's responsible for it, but the expression is, how you do anything is how you do everything. So my eating was compulsive. It was racy. It was not particularly pleasant. If I was enjoying my binging, it was very temporarily. It was like, and then immediately remorse, unbelievable remorse. And I really did believe every time I binged, because I am an optimist at my core, I believed the next day it would never happen again. But because I set it up that way for myself, when I was using the food in an unkind way, I would go crazy and I would eat so much of it because I thought, well, I'm never going to eat this thing that I love again. So I have to eat all that there is on the planet. And a big part of my recovery now is understanding I can have whatever I want. And because I tell myself that, I don't need to have all the things there are. And so I've done crazy things in this recovery recently that I didn't really think were possible for most of my life, like eat half a sandwich and then stop because I wasn't really hungry to eat anymore. Stop and ask myself in the pause, does your belly feel pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Are you really hungry or are you thirsty? Do you want something sweet or salty, or do you need a nap? You know, what do you need? And that is all new thinking for someone who used to just come from, I'm not okay. I have to punish myself around food. And then maybe then I'll be worthy of love. So I think I have 7 more minutes to talk. I think that's what that's telling me. Okay. All right. So, and this includes questions too. Is this for questions now? Rest for later. Okay. All right. So I'm going to talk about some of the other things that I use in recovery that are helpful. The first one is the pause. The second one is understanding that there is a power greater than myself, but my understanding of God, and God is a very personal thing. Oh, I should mention that. When I came to program, I didn't believe in God. I was raised by an agnostic narcissist. My dad, literally, when people would sneeze, he would say, I bless you. Like, it was insane. And so I was raised that religion, my parents were both educated people who believed that religion was for stupid people who didn't know better and that it was a weakness. I don't feel that way anymore. I feel that when I am aligned with the greater good, God, you know, I've heard so many wonderful things. What does God stand for? I think we talked about this at the convention. Some people say it stands for good orderly direction. I've heard people say it stands for go outdoors, right? Get in touch with nature, feel the air on your face. Because I can tell you right now, when I'm binging my brains out, I'm not feeling any air on my face. I'm not noticing anything. I'm just pulling the shades and just alone with the food, trying not to feel. So so God, good early direction, go outdoors. And I think whatever God is for you, if God is something that's not familiar to you or something that doesn't speak to you, then just think about if the way that you're doing it right now, all on your own, if that's working for you. And if it isn't, then maybe be open to, my suggestion is to be open to, maybe there's something else that you can't quite see yet. I'm very grateful. I also want to say that another gift of program is I have an almost 30-year-old son who has found his way to another program, and it's been very helpful for him. And God works in mysterious ways because I left program after, I was in program from the time I was 21 to 32. And then, just like you said, Pam, I went out and did research and development for 30 years. I kind of abandoned the program. It didn't abandon me. I left it behind. And then a couple of years ago, I was turning 64, I think I was turning. And I was uncomfortable in my body, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it was at the time that a lot of people were doing a certain kind of medicine that's very popular right now. And I won't mention it because in my our meetings in LA, it's considered outside issue. So I won't mention it. But and there was something that people were doing, and it was really working for them. But I didn't think it was for me. I also have some complications in that I am a pancreatic cancer survivor. And so I didn't want to do anything that might mess with my pancreas, what I have left of it, my half a pancreas. So all that said, I came back to the rooms. I found my way back, and it was very humbling. And I spent a lot of the first year in program crying at every meeting, just because it was like I had been holding it in for many years and I didn't even realize it. And so I started to let my, it was like I was thawing out. It's like I'm picturing myself like this sort of uncomfortable ice cube. And then I started thawing. And I think tears are unbelievably powerful. I once heard it said that when you cry, there's a healing. When you cry in the face with others, it means that you have witnesses to your healing, and it's even that much more of a healing. So writing is a tool that I use a lot. I always think of the writing page as a safe, cheap therapist, and it's a safe, non-judgmental place. I also teach writing in my professional life. And today I told my students, writing is like do you have Trader Joe's in the Midwest? Do you know what that is? Grocery store called Trader Joe's. Okay. I said, writing is like the kind cashier at Trader Joe's with the kind eyes who actually listens to what you have to say. And the page is like that. Or when we write, it just receives us. So I know somebody on this call was thinking that maybe this was a conversation with God meeting, a two-way conversation. But I find the tool of writing to be that. I ask the page questions, and then I wait for a response, and I write them out. I also have done labyrinth walking. Now I'm going to really sound like a Californian, where you walk into a labyrinth with a question and you walk out with an answer. Prayer, meditation, dancing, stillness. Not having to have the answers to things. I grew up in a house where everybody was a know-it-all, and it wasn't safe to say, I don't know. And one of the greatest gifts in my life at this age is to say, I don't know. I like to learn. I try to think of myself as a lifelong learner, and always, there's always new information. So that's all really I need to say right now. I think I'll stop there. And if anybody has any questions or wants to say anything, I would certainly love to hear it. And then after that, I will go to my appointment, but I'm so grateful to be here with all of you. And also, maybe Pam, can you put my phone number in the chat in case anybody wants to talk anytime I'm available. And if you're on the East Coast or the Midwest and you need somebody to call late at night, it's not late at night where I am. It'll be 3 hours earlier, so you can always call me. Oh, I want to say one more thing about late night meetings. I think it's really cool that this meeting takes place at 10 o'clock on the East Coast. When I started in program, I used to go to these meetings, the Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm not a drug addict, but I used to go to them because they were late at night. And I always, my challenges with food were always at night, because basically I would diet and fast and exercise all day and binge all night. That was my pattern for years and years and years. And I always thought, why aren't there OA meetings at midnight? That's when I need one. So the fact that you're on Zoom and you actually can talk to people at 10 o'clock at night, it's kind of amazing. So anyhow, thanks for listening. I'm very grateful to be here. Thanks so much.